The Sefer names through Parsha Frameshir for Parshas Bereishis. We'll be looking at the Sefer Anshe Hashem by Rav Yirmiyahu Lev. So the Pasuk Anshe Hashem comes up in Perek Vav, Pasuk Dalid, where it says that the Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and afterwards the sons of the nobles would come, and they would bear for them their mighty men who were of old Anshe Hashem, the men of renown. So Rav Yirmiyahu Lev, who lived from 1811 to 1874, was a leading Hungarian rabbi, born in Kolin in Moravia, to Rav Binyamin Zev Wolf, the author of the Sha'arei Torah. His grandfather was Rav Elazar, the author of the Shemen Rokeach. He was a leading rabbi at that time in Hungary, second only possibly to the Kassav Sofer. He learned under Maram Bennett, the Rav of Nicholsburg, received smicha from him at the age of 17. He was initially the Rav in Magendorf from 1844 to 1851, was the successor of the Yismach Moshe in the city of Oel, Hungary. He established a famous yeshiva there. In addition to his Sefer Anshe Hashem, he's more famous for the Sefer he wrote Aha Rambam called Divrei Yirmiyahu, which was first published in 1875. So the Sefer Anshe Hashem essentially addresses the question of who are the Anshe Hashem, the men of renown who pass on the Mesorah of the Torah Shebaal Peh, and who are the Anshe Hashem who are able to receive it and keep it going. So he first explains that the Rabbanon are called Sofrim, as the Gemara tells us, because they count all the letters of the Torah. They don't go four Amos without Torah. Someone who's part of the Mesorah has to make sure they are not thinking about inappropriate things, thinking about Torah in dirty places, they have knowledge in all areas. He goes on to explain the attributes of the Gedolim in each generation who are able to pass on the Mesorah and the qualities they possess. Their whole life, everything relates to Hashem, like in the cases in the Gemara of Abi Chilkia and others who were workers, but they wouldn't interrupt for a moment because they were a Schar Yom, a Pol Yom. He goes through a list of conditions and of Amoraim and Tanaim who all had jobs, real jobs, menial labor, but that was all part of their godless. They stayed away from Kavod. They were mistopic b'muat, they were sensitive to the needs of others. In the Hakdama, it says that, what does it mean that the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, when it says, ma'od ma'od have shval ruach, a person should be very, very humble. Why the need for the ma'od ma'od? Just say, a person should be humble. And also, why does it say that a person's end will be like the dust and the worms? Okay, we understand humans will die. Why the imagery? So he explains that when we say ma'od, it means a lot, but it also is limiting in that it assumes there is something finite about it. So for example, when the Pasuk by Bereishis says, V'hinei tov ma'od, the measure says, Zeha maves. So everyone asks, how is maves tov? But the answer is that the Medrash knew that this has to be referring to death because it says tov ma'od. Ma'od is always limiting. Oh, this is a lot, but there's a cutoff. So therefore it refers to death, which shows how finite life can really be. The same thing by Moshe Rabbeinu. It says he was an anav ma'od, mikol adam, to teach us that while Moshe was very, very humble, there was still a cutoff. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu has midos that are infinite. Moshe, as humble as he was still a human being. He was good, but he wasn't perfect. And that's why we say ma'od, ma'od by humility. Because as great as we can be, we understand that the real perfection when it comes to midos is only by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Well, so now we'll quote two different limudim from actually the Sefer Divrei Yirmiyahu al Harambam from Rav Lev. So the first relates to Gemar Megillah on Daf Tezayim Abayis, which says that the Vav in the word Vaisasa, one of the last of the 10 sons of Haman, must be elongated like a rod used to distance ships from rocks near the shore to symbolize that all 10 sons were hung on one gallows. So what does it mean that the letter Vav of Vaisasa should be elongated? So the Rush quotes some who say this means the Vav should be written larger than others, and others who say that the letter should be read in an elongated way. The Ran gives a third shot, so they mean the top of the letter Vav, which is normally bent to the side, should be straightened up. The Ritva says that's the pshat, but it only works when one writes with Ksav Ashuris. The Ritva and the Ran both say it can't be that the letter Vav should be bigger, because we don't have a Mesorah for that. So how do we paskin? So the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch says that the Vav of Vaisasa should be elongated, but does not explain. So the Mishnah Berurah and the Taz quote the explanation of the Ran, that the top of the Vav should be written straight up to symbolize that they were all hung on one straight gallow. However, the Shaar HaTzion says that nowadays that's not our minog. Rather, we follow the Rush, that the Vav of Vaisasa should be written larger than the other letters, and we do have a Masorah for this. The Ramban Darkei Moshe also says that the minog Olam is to change the writing by making the Vav a larger letter. The Ramah comments on the Mechaber that some say we should elongate the Vav when writing it, some say we should elongate the Vav when reading it. And the Gra says that the fact that this was placed in the halachos of Ksivas HaMegillah and not Kriyas HaMegillah, we can infer that the real halacha is to elongate it when writing. Now the Aruch HaShulchan does say that when one elongates the Vav, he should do it in the Nigin when reading it, as well as elongating it when writing it. You should do both. So the big question here is the Rambam leaves out this halacha. He doesn't mention the halacha of elongating the Vav of Vaisasa. So why not? So Rav Lev in the Dir Miriam Yahu, in Hilchos Megillah, Perek Beis, Halacha Yud Beis, suggests a possible explanation as to why the Rambam omitted this halacha. He notes that the Gemara Megillah on Tav Zayin Amud Beis says that we say all 10 sons of Haman in one breath because they all died at the same time. And the Rambam does quote that halacha and indicates that through that halacha, we are giving praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his Gevura at destroying all of our enemies at the same time. Well, the Gemara also says we elongate the Vav Vaisasa to symbolize that all 10 sons were hung on one gallow. So Rav Lev and Devarim Yahu suggests that it could be that these two halachos, one of saying all 10 sons in one breath, and the other of elongating the Vav to show that all 10 sons were hung on one gallow, actually argue on one another. I mean, the one who says that we must say all 10 sons of Haman in one breath holds that it's to celebrate HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroying all of our enemies at once. And that's the best. However, if you say we should elongate the Vav Vaisasa, it sounds like it's best to celebrate HaKadosh Baruch Hu destroying each one of our enemies individually. Symbolically, we're showing that each son was hung separately on the gallows, which shows more power. So those seem to contradict. So by the Rambam quoting the halacha of saying all 10 sons of Haman in one breath, it shows the Rambam's posking that it's best to celebrate HaKadosh Baruch Hu's strength in killing all of our enemies at once and not each one individually. And that could be why the Rambam doesn't quote the halacha of elongating the Vav of Vaisasa. A second halacha the Divrei Yirmiyahu brings up relates to the bracha on Lakis on Hanukkah. So what's this about? So the Gemara in Brachos on Daf Lamed Chesam and Aleph says that Rava asked, "What's the bracha on Trima?" So Rava wasn't sure what Trima was. Maybe it was some type of leftover substance after crushing dates. But he realized Trima referred to crushed up dates. Crushed up dates. So the Gemara concludes that the bracha on crushed up dates is ha'etz, because even though they're crushed up, it remains in its original state. So what's considered crushed? So Rashi says, crushed means mashed up, but not fully pulverized. Whereas the Rambam writes, crushed means that the dates are made into a dough-like substance. So are Rashi and the Rambam giving different explanations here? So the Trumas Hadeshen thinks they're arguing, and Rashi would say that only if it's partially crushed, it would retain the bracha of ha'etz, but fully pulverized, it would change to shahakol. But the Rambam says that even when it's a dough-like substance, seemingly fully pulverized, the bracha would remain ha'etz. However, the Taz thinks that Rashi and Rambam really agree. The Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch quotes the language of the Rambam that if dates are crushed by hand and made into a dough-like substance, the bracha remains ha'etz. But the Ramah quotes, some who say the bracha should be shahakol. The Kachilu, we should be concerned for that opinion. But if one recites ha'etz, he's still Yotze. So the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, explains that the Rama understood Rashi and the Rambam to be arguing, like the Trumas Hadeshen. And while the Mechaber quotes the opinion of the Rambam, the Rama is saying that even though he thinks the Rambam is correct, we should be concerned for the opinion of Rashi, who holds that the bracha, when pulverized, would go down to a shahakol. So again, we really have to define what's considered pulverized. So Mishnah Brura says, what determines whether something's pulverized or not when it comes to dates is whether nikar tsuras hapri, whether you can still identify the original fruit in its current form. If the form of the fruit remains, the bracha will remain ha'etz. If the form of the fruit is no longer there, the bracha will go down to shahakol. So the Mishnah Berurah's distinction also needs to be clarified. How do I determine Nikar Tzuras HaPri if the form of the fruit remains? So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach takes a very practical approach. He says that the way to determine whether the form of the fruit remains is to see whether people can tell that this crushed substance is from the original food. For example, if an avocado is crushed up and made into guacamole, everyone can tell that that guacamole was made from avocado. So therefore, if one were to eat plain guacamole, according to this logic, the bracha on guacamole would be the same as eating an avocado, it would be ha'etz. The Divrei Miyahu in Hilchos Brachos, Parches Halacha Dalid, is actually medayik this, infers this, from what appears to be an extra word in that Gemara in Brachos. When the Gemara explains why crushed dates remain ha'etz, it says that bilmilsaihu kaimei kidmei ikara. They remain in their original form. Why is the word kidmei ikara necessary? It must be that it's not enough for some form of the original food to remain, but rather the crushed substance needs to be able to be identified as the original food, kidmei ikara. And therefore, when it comes to lakas, the different guy doesn't talk about this, but when it comes to lakas, it could be that not all lakas will get the same bracha. If you have potato lakas that you could identify that they were originally from a potato, they're strung, for example, it would seem to get a hadama. But if it's crushed, like mashed potatoes, where it's from a packet or where it's completely pulverized to the point where this could be anything, it would seem to go down to shahakol. So that's a little bit about Rav Yirmiyahu Lev, his sefer Anshei Hashem, and also his sefer Divrei Yirmiyahu al HaRambam.